Today, I'm happy to share with you a guest who's studied the ways of the mind and has been working helping people individually to manifest where they where they're working towards in their mental and psychological place in their life to achieve and reach towards the goals and dreams that you're working towards. So I got Brendan with me here. Thanks so much for joining me today, Brendan. Let's see if I can get your screen up here next to mine. I got to minimize me. There you are. Thanks for joining us.
Howdy. Good day, y'all. Nice to be here, Chris. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, we met through Telegram, actually.
Yeah.
And Brendan is the guy who set it up with the End of All Evil books. I guess you got them. You figured out how to get them printed, right, Brendan?
Yeah, I printed a lot of them. So
if anyone wants them. Want to get some copies, he's the guy to get the best deal through. I have them now for sale on my website. We're a little bit marked up just so someone can donate to the podcast, you know, and so you can find the link through my podcast. Or you can buy, you know, multiple copies through Brendan or, you know, however you want to do it. But we want to get these books out there to people. It's an awesome book. How did that work out anyway? I was curious. I never asked you that.
Well, I feel like, first off, I think that it's completely justified the price that you're stating because it is valuable. And you think that you can definitely carry value with that and help people understand that of the amount of value that it has to carry just by increasing the price a little bit. But the way I started this is I was inspired by Mark Passio, of course, the guy himself, and he helped share that to me, and I've been able to bring it to others since then. But I just printed copies through a local printing company here in LA, and it's been a blessing to be able to share, so grateful.
Yeah, it's a good example of what we're going to talk about too, bringing things into reality.
Yes.
You know, like I was struggling with the concept of I wanted to get this book printed and it seemed like something hard to me, like, oh, there's probably some laws I have to get through, or, you know, and I even talked with a few other people and we had formed a group. We were going to start researching what would it take to do it. And here you just did it. You just called somewhere and just got it done. It was like, oh, okay, that's how you do it.
There's no copyright on the work. So that I'm sure really assisted with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's no transgression for sure, because this is done, you know, pseudo anonymously. So I don't think there's any transgression whatsoever. And when I asked Mark Passio directly, I said, is there a problem with me printing this? He's like, no, go for it. So I'm like, okay,
cool. Yeah, I guess no one seems to know who Jeremy Locke is. We're guessing it's a pseudonym.
That's what I'm assuming, because, you know, if we're going to go by the last name Locke, then we're going to have other associations for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It tends to, it sounds that way to me for sure. And that's what I guessed. But I love the book. And so, yeah, we'll start off with that. I love to people check out The End of All Evil.
Yes, sir.
But curious how I like to ask my guests, you know, I feel like the term evil gets warped in today's world. And part of what my show has been is redefining this word. Mm-hmm. So that people understand it in a more realistic day-to-day way. But I'd like to hear your interpretation of evil. What does that mean?
Well, I think Locke hones in directly on it, and I like his definition of the destruction of freedom. Evil is the destruction of freedom, quite simply said. And freedom is the infinite value of the individual, as Jeremy Locke has proposed, and I completely agree with that definition. I think that there's so many forces in this world that have influenced our subconscious mind to accept these notions that of evil, of limited value for individuals, that it has created within us this this lack, this disconnection from what our principles are actually standing for and how our principles are being activated in the real world and how we can actually stand on them. So evil is, you know, definitely corrupting principles of other people.
Absolutely. And the core principles that we share, the things that we've learned through this book, through people like Mark Passio, and there's not a lot out there, I've found. It's somewhat frustrating. You get all kinds of podcasts and presenters and content creators that want to detail the problems in our world. detail the names, the places, the deeds, the evil deeds that were done.
Yes.
But so rare is it to find anyone that really approaches the solution. How do we stop being part of this evil cycle? How do we change? How do we start to manifest the world we want to see for our future, the legacy we want to leave for the future generations? And more, the longer I've been doing this podcasting, I'm going in that direction. So I'm really happy to hear what you're talking about. Taking advantage of our understanding of our subconscious and conscious mind. Mm-hmm. And how do we put ourselves in that place where we can be productive and work towards something that's going to help ourselves and others and not contribute to the evil that we're all kind of stuck to
passively, you know? Accepting.
Yeah,
I completely agree with that perspective, and that is why I'm so interested in using hypnosis to create meaningful changes to our subconscious mind. So much of what our subconscious has been programmed with has been done by these forces that do want to devalue humanity, that do want to take your sovereignty, your ability to create meaningful changes for yourself away. And I think hypnosis is a perfect tool to rewrite those patterns in order to step into your highest vision of yourself. And that's what I'm interested in enabling people to do, is to escape patterns that no longer serve them and create meaningful changes for themselves according to their conscious will.
And we should let folks know, we're going to talk about this again at the end of the show, but you can contact Brendan right now and he will set up a free consultation for people.
Yes, sir.
And so that's amazing, you know, getting on that while it's still free. I imagine at a certain point, you know, it's not always going to be free. Maybe it will, but I recommend people to take advantage of his offer. Is that going to be through empowerhypnosis.app?
Yes, sir. Empowerhypnosis.app is my website where you can find my Calendly link in order to schedule an appointment so we can talk directly one-to-one. In order to, you know, create that change, anything you need to address, you can do so using the power of hypnosis, using the power of training your own subconscious mind. There's a lot there that you can actually pull out and utilize for your own benefit. And I've been helping a lot of people in various ways. I helped one lady get off of cocaine, break her addiction to cocaine, which is really positive, really powerful. Been helping a lot of people in the community and outside the community to step into their highest vision of success, right? And I like to use the definition of success that is success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal. And that's Nightingale who said that, I believe. And the idea of that being that you are already a success if you have a worthy goal that you are moving towards. So if you have something in mind of value that you care about, that you see as having a positive effect in the world and you're moving towards it, then you are by definition already a success. And I help my clients recognize that success in themselves.
I love that. Success and every step can be success. It puts my mind to,
yeah.
I just went on one of my favorite hikes in the world, my soul's home. Is called the Castle Crags, and my lifetime friend came to visit me this last week, and we climbed to the top, and there was snow up there, and it was pretty exciting. And I did a presentation called How to Will Power, and I climbed that mountain in that presentation and talked my whole way, and I was talking about willpower. And one thing we realized, my buddy and I, as we were climbing the mountain this time, is success is every step on the journey, because, you know, even if we had only gone 3/4 up that mountain and decided, okay, today we're going to stop here, it's snowing or whatever, we still would have had a successful mission.
Yeah.
And we were realizing on the way, even when you're breathing hard, even when it's the strenuous part of the hike, we came here to hike.
That is success.
And our younger self might have been like, oh, this hurts, my leg hurts. But our older self, our wise self, has learned to refocus and be like, this is beautiful. I'm glad I'm breathing hard. I'm glad my legs feel sore. Look what I'm seeing, you know, and enjoying every moment of that. Then you are embodying that success. It doesn't matter where the end point of the hike is. We're going to be back in the car and there's going to be another hike. You know, success is the journey.
Yeah.
And how we appreciate and how we consciously go through that journey. So I'm curious to hear your take on willpower.
Yeah,
where does willpower come from? That was a question I asked a lot of people.
Willpower, it comes from your spiritual side. It really does come from that internal guide that arises inside you. And a real quick note about success. If you're only labeling success as the culmination of your effort, then you can only have success but for a moment, and then you're on to the next thing. But if you're understanding success as the process itself, then you are a success the second you decide that you're on that path. And so willpower is cultivating, it's a muscle that we cultivate, right? And it's not something that we're always operating on the highest level of. It's something that we have to train and get better at, to become stronger in using in order to have the best effect possible for us. And so, willpower is inherent in every human being, is part of their sovereignty and freedom. It's not granted by any authority. It's our nature. It's built into ourselves. And that's, an important note to keep in mind about willpower is that it comes from you. It doesn't come from other individuals. I mean, sure, you can have people who are training your subconscious according to their will, but then you're subverting your own higher understanding of these forces along their mentality, along the training that they've been pushing forward for you. So hope that's a good answer.
Well, it leads me to another good question, because I do some one-on-one discussions with people too. And what I've discovered, and some folks I've discussed this with, people that are going through various level of depression or even loneliness or just kind of low times in life.
Definitely.
And feeling that like lack of connection to their willpower. And just, it's kind of like they want it. They know what it's felt like at other times in life, but they're just feeling like I can't access that will, that part of me that's passionate. It feels far away. It feels like I can't get at it. And so I think this is kind of where a lot of people get stuck. And I personally am guessing, and I'd like you to expand on this.
Yes.
One of the things that causes that is what you just said. There's so much programming in our world, and that comes external when we're young in many ways. And many times we get damaged at a young age or traumatized by some type of external authority telling us we can't daydream or telling us we can't follow our dreams or we'll never reach them. And somewhere along the line, we start repeating these negative cyclical programs, and we wind up programming ourselves into failure. And then that cuts us off of willpower. I don't know if I'm right. That's just a theory I'm going to throw out there. I'd like to hear what you think on that.
That sounds apt for sure. That sounds very accurate, because there is so much that is subverting our will every day and trying to convince us of their own vision of reality, right? And so that perspective, that willpower is drained according, I guess you could say, drained by these structures that do not serve us is a true one. And I think that we can take back that power, that we all have that individual ability to regain, reclaim those thought forms that are benefiting us in the highest form possible. And that's why I'm interested in hypnosis, because it really does enable people to take control back of their own mind, to cut out that programming which has not served them for ages, for as long as these powers have been in existence.
Yeah, a little before we started this recorded talk, we were in our pre-chat.
Yeah.
I was talking a little bit about my own experience trying to become an entrepreneur. And back when I first joined Autonomy, Richard Grove's Autonomy, I realized in the last 2, 3, 4 years that I do have a lot of mental blocks that were keeping me from achieving the things I wanted to achieve. And at first, my mind would say, no, that's not true. No, I don't. It's just this and that. And I would blame physical world issues and situations. But the more I've internalized and thought about it, I've realized like a lot of it's inside of me, my own mental cage. And a good example of that is self-talk. A friend of mine that I met in Autonomy named Agnieszka, really neat woman who's done talks at Anarchapulco.
Oh, very cool.
She asked me one time, she heard me verbalizing some negativity. Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot, I messed up. Dang it. You know, like I was kind of talking myself down a little bit. And she goes, do you do that a lot? And I was like, what do you mean? So I didn't even recognize I was doing it. And she goes, imagine you're talking to a four-year-old. Would you talk to him that way? Ooh. That you're talking to yourself? And I was like, oh, gosh, what'd she mean by that? And then I started imagining talking to a four-year-old. You wouldn't be like, why'd you do that? That was stupid. You know, you wouldn't do that. And then we have to learn that our subconscious inside self is a very much like a little child that needs to be treated with respect and care and nurturing. And so I've learned that how I talk to myself on a daily basis is so important. And I've spent the last 2 or 3 years retuning that internal conversation until it's much more complimentary, and it encourages me instead of constantly talking me down. Completely. So I'm curious how this ties into what you teach and what you've seen.
And the way I've phrased that, I like how you've talked about as your internal child, but I've talked about it in terms of like, oh, how would you talk to your best friend? Like, would you be talking to your best friend the way you talk to yourself? And I think that's an important distinction that we would all know. It's like, no, you treat people kindly, you treat yourself kindly as well. And I think one of the strategies that I use in order to reprogram some of those things that just bubble up to the top, those negative thoughts and negative self-talk, I use a strategy where you cancel out, you actively decide to cancel a thought form. So you can just repeat it in your own mind, like, cancel this, cancel, cancel, cancel. And you just teach yourself, you train yourself being like, oh, to reject those thoughts in order to actually escape those forms that are not serving you. So it works with not just negative thoughts, but it works with even brain worms, you know, or like musical little gems that just have encoded themselves in your mind, things that you don't want to keep replaying over and over. I just use the self-suggestion of cancel, cancel, cancel over and over in order to create that change for myself. And that's a really powerful one that I help people with as well.
Right on. Yeah. Like you start to see them coming.
Yeah.
As you begin to recognize. And for me, it's been like I almost think of the word like rebuff or rebut, rebut.
Okay.
You know, like when my brain will say, oh, that was dumb. You didn't put your keys where you should have. That was stupid. And then I'll rebut that. I'll be like, well, it wasn't the best call, right? But here's what was happening. It was an uncommon situation. And normally I'm really good about my keys. In fact, I haven't actually ever lost them.
Hey.
I've managed to find them every time.
Kudos.
You know what I mean? So I'll talk to my brain and I'll explain to it that, yeah, you're right. On the one hand, it's almost like there's different personalities in my head. And I'm willing to recognize that the only way to integrate those personalities is to find some agreement between them. And there's a part of myself that wants to be very critical. And I don't want to like kick that guy out of the door completely because it does help me sometimes. That critical part kind of keeps me from getting in trouble and helping me remember my keys. And so it's like, I don't want to put that part of myself down either and be like, no, that's not true. But I do want to be like, yeah, that's true. But we don't need to put it like that. We can say it in a different way. In fact, we can say this is an opportunity to work on our procedure of how we keep keys when we go to the lake or whatever, you know.
It is an opportunity. That's a great perspective. And the word that comes to mind for me is having grace in order to accept myself and accept that I'm a human. It's hard being human. You know, we're all doing the best we can. That's all we ever can do. We can never not be doing our best. If we could do anything else, then we would be doing it, but we can't. This is where we're at. This is where our mentally we're at, and allowing ourselves the grace and the latitude to be imperfect. That's okay. We're not, no one is going to be completely clean as the driven snow, right? As they say.
Oh, I'm perfect in absolutely every way. Practically perfect. I'm curious about your journey. Have you gone through in your life some kind of matrix awakening experience where this kind of all, you know, I know you've studied Passio's work, and for a lot of us, that was sort of a hinge point in our life. But
yeah,
did you have to kind of go through this awakening experience? And how have you transformed yourself? How's this work for you? I'm curious.
Yeah. I initially came into a lot of these thought forms from James Corbett, and that was my touchstone. And from there I learned Richard Grove, and then from Grove, Passio. And I've just been using these various strategies and various tools to try and have a meaningful impact on others as well as myself, you know? And that was my initial start for where these thoughts came from for myself, was to try and deal with some of the medical aspects of the things that I've been, you know, experiencing, but do so in a way that's positive and beneficial for my long-term growth and, you know, building up exactly what I see in my mind's eye. And so I just want to help bring these tools to others so that they can be empowered as well. And so they can create, we're all building the ship, right?
Yeah. And the more hands, you know, the better it works.
Yes, sir.
Did you have any kind of, in your family background, like spiritual practices? Were your parents part of a religion, a cultural religion?
No, I was on the atheist train for about a long time, probably 20 years now. And I was one of those diehard determinists who was my experience though of rejecting that was just by contemplating what I was actually, if there was a God, and my experience with a higher power while I was doing the dishes. And it just came to me. It's like, oh, you know what? I was wrong.
Wow.
And so it
wasn't a particular book or speaker. It just sort of culminated in your mind, like logic combined with intuition.
Yeah. I was just thinking on it over and over, and it came to me. It's like, like a bolt of lightning, right?
That's what I call the divine crystal. You know, when we touch in with our ultimate self, the part of ourself that is connected to the God, the great all, and we all have that. And so yes. I've said it often, and I know it to be true, but it's good to hear the confirmation from someone like you that if someone just really honestly thinks and meditates, the truth is going to reveal itself, you know? Yeah. But you got to kind of open the door and provide the space for that to happen. And usually our mind is full of traffic and clashing ideas and following someone else's. The reason I asked you about cultural religions is for many of us, if you grow up in a religious structure, there's a lot of mental pathways and there's a mental cage that gets built around guilt, around fear. And we're following rules and it's someone else's rule book. And it's like what I call someone else's chess game where you're the pawn and you don't really get to make the decisions because, like you said, if everything's deterministic, well, you don't have a choice in it. Really, you're just playing a role.
Yeah.
And so to get out of one of those belief structures and into a self-deterministic place of will, how does someone make that transition? You know, that's tricky, right? Or what causes that? What brings that about?
That's a great question. And full disclosure, I don't know. That's the
me either. You were supposed to show up with the answers, Brandon.
We're all building the temple together, right? We're all doing the work. So I think
There isn't simple answers to that. I think that's where I'm going with that. That's not a one and done. Every person's story and their travel is going to be unique. And so we kind of have to figure out how to meet people where they're at. I like what you're doing is providing people a way to show up and meet you. What were you thinking about that, meeting more people where they're at?
I think that's a perfect analogy because, you know, you can only ever meet someone as far as they've met themselves. So if someone has that willful choice, that decision in their mind that they don't want to engage with these thoughts, that they're unwilling to even entertain anything other than that which they have already come to understand or be trained to understand, that is, then you can't crack that shell. But, you know, I think humor is one of those ways that which the shell can be cracked. If you can make someone take a thought and you know, critically analyze it in the form of laughter, then I think that's one of those methods for really actually doing a lot of good work to help people understand oh, you know what? Maybe it's not true. This thing that I've put so much time, so much attention into, that it's there's something here. There's a logical disconnect. And so, but at the same time, right, it's their choice. If they choose ignorance, if they choose ignorance versus if they choose to be mindful about that which they're learning and to actually incorporate their thoughts into their mind, into their understanding and experience, then, you know, that's the win if they actually do make that decision.
Yeah, I see it as a path. Like the climbing the mountain analogy, you know, you can just stay on the highway where everybody else is at, or you can get off on the exit and see the peak and be like, no, I want to get to the top of that.
Yeah.
And that's a very individual decision. So let's just say someone in our audience who's listening right now has kind of like gotten to that place in their life where they've already taken the exit off of the main highway of the mainstream thought, and they're starting to research their own philosophy and ideas. Do you have any recommendations for people on meditation practices or consciousness practices?
Meditation is an important way to quiet the mind in order to actually be able to reflect upon what it means and what you're actually thinking about, if those thought forms in your mind are serving you or not serving you. And for me, I think that the tool that I'm interested in using is one of hypnosis, because there's many paths to this. There's not one way in particular, but I think hypnosis is a really apt one, especially in our society. A lot of people are walking around partially hypnotized every day without even recognizing it. These thought forms are just flying around them and training their subconscious mind that in ways that do not serve them. So that's kind of what I'm very much interested in, is how you can use this hypnosis or meditation, which I think meditation and hypnosis are two sides of the same coin, right? It's a similar experience that they share there. But hypnosis is more of a directed form of meditation, where meditation and you're clearing and you're allowing things, you know, your consciousness just to arise naturally. Hypnosis is direct determining what you want to have unfold for yourself and then building those structures in your mind actively, as opposed to passively with meditation. So that's just kind of one way.
Yeah, I suppose you could meditate on a movie or a TV, right? Just sit there and zone. We call it zoning out, right?
Yeah.
And I always talk about when I think about hypnosis, like when you're not self-directing the hypnosis, the perfect example for me is if you've driven to the same place many times, like a job every day, and then one day you are going somewhere different, but your mind is somewhere else, and you find yourself following that same route you've driven on many times, like on remote control. And then you kind of like wake out of it, like, whoa,
completely.
It was like I was in a hypnosis there. I was just going down the rut. And that's what it takes to get out of that. What does it take for you personally? Everyone's going to be different, right?
Yeah. And that experience of the idea of driving someplace and just waking up at your destination without even consciously thinking about how you got there, that is a hypnotic experience. And that is why, in particular, radio advertisements are so effective, because people put themselves in that natural state of receptivity of hypnosis. And when they hear these suggestions coming in through the radio, it builds your subconscious mind pretty much exactly as the radio advertisement wishes. So there's a lot of tricky forms of hypnosis that are happening all around us at all times, but it's just about willfully using those structures, willfully using the tool in order to create the changes that you want to have happen inside you, not what you're just passively accepting.
Yeah, I think the sad truth is, if we're not writing our own code, there's billions of other things and entities out there that want to write a code for you. And our world is inundated with other people's programs. And one thing, I've studied some marketing, they talk about like these commercials you're discussing, they want to repeat the word that they want you to hear like 7 times minimum in the commercial. Oh, wow. If you listen, they do that often. They'll say, whatever, the End Evil podcast, and you know, they'll sprinkle it through the whole little 30-second commercial.
Yeah.
And repetition is one of the keys of hypnotism, whether it's self-hypnotism or what we're talking about, like default being mesmerized hypnotism by external forces. So repetition seems to be something that that works on us, our brains. So how do we, like you were saying, building that will muscle, exercise, how do we exercise repetition in a positive manner rather than getting influenced by the default other people's, you know?
Yeah. Well, repetition is the process of hypnosis that I use very directly. And I use something called direct drive, where what we do is we take, and when I'm working with clients, is we take a clear vision of their personal success, and then we distill that vision down into a single sentence. I think I mentioned this already, worded positively in the present tense and with emotionally triggering words. And then as we enter a hypnotic state, an advanced relaxation state, then we can use this self-suggestion, the single sentence, over and over with repeatedly in order to build the structures that we want for ourselves. And the specific number of repetitions that I've been using with clients is 108. And so that's a culturally significant number of repetitions. You know, mala beads have 108 beads, and a lot of Eastern cultures, that's a really powerful number. And I found that it works wonders with clients, just going over and over, repeating this suggestion while imagining it to be true, imagining what it would feel like, imagining what it looks like, as many aspects as you can use, you can pull into your reality of your vision of what your reality is. And it really does help people step directly into that vision and to become that person that they imagine themselves to be, because we are all the people we imagine ourselves to be. And that's just how it works.
Yeah, we are co-creators of reality. And I mean, there's always a twist in that where people want to turn it into reality is just what we create. But I tend to think that we affect and change aspects of the reality we experience. And we do not one of us, we all of us are affecting that by what we do or what we don't do and what we think or don't think. You know, every little drop in the puddle is affecting the ripples that change the look of the whole lake or pond or ocean, right?
Yes, sir.
There was something you said that really excited me, and I just kind of lost where I was going to say on it, but I guess on the process of changing ourselves and working towards where we want to go, how does natural law and the understanding of natural law play in that to you?
Well, natural law, it is directly linked to the infinite value of humanity and the infinite value of the individual. And we each have that ability to create for ourselves or to... I kind of lost the thread there. What I meant to say is that natural law is, stands on the two principles that I think we each have that understanding of inherently, and the divine feminine and the divine masculine principles, right? The idea of not harming another sentient being, ourselves and the ones we love in our everyday interactions. And so
That's pretty crucial. It's something I've been thinking a lot about, the self-defense principle aspect of that is kind of like missing in our society.
Completely.
And not just on the physical realm, because it's hugely missing there, but on the mental realm. If, for instance, I'm in a relationship where on a daily basis I'm getting kind of beat down emotionally, and I'm not really seeing or recognizing that as a problem, it's kind of putting me at a lower level of mental stability on a day-to-day basis. And the longer I let that go on, the more I get used to that rut of kind of being slightly beat down by another person who claims to be in a better place for me or authoritarian. And if I believe that and I internalize that and repeat that process, I create myself to be at this sort of lower trajectory that
lower vibrational
doesn't need to be, right?
Yeah.
So the hard part is changing that, you know, is looking at your life and seeing it. You know, it's hard to be objective because we're subjective beings, right?
So true. But we do.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we do have that capability, though, to create those changes according to our will and to reflect a little deeper. And I think that comes into play with meditation, to have a clear vision of our experience and a clear vision of where we are currently at, right? Instead of just being pawns played by another, we can have an understanding of our own value, of our own power, of our, and then, you know, how we can internalize it.
But you were I was thinking about, you know, that understanding, like it's hard to say sometimes. Philosophy is so fundamental. And a little book I'm writing right now, I even say it's survival. A good philosophy is survival, because if our framework of our mind is that I'll never be able to achieve such and such, I'll always be this, then we'll never be able to achieve such and such, because in our mind, we've already repeated over and over. And I hear people doing this on the silliest things. Sometimes you try to show somebody something, they're like, oh, I can't get it. I'm not going to be able to get this. I'm no good at this. You're like, right up front, right when they're first starting to learn it. Yeah. And I've done it in the past, but that's not a way to learn something very well. If you're already saying right at the beginning, I'm not going to be able to do it, you're programming yourself. No, it's not going to work, right? So, you know, when that apply that to good and bad, if we don't understand what's right and what's wrong in the world, everything's guesswork. And so how do we form a rock solid philosophy about how we want to live and interact in the world when we don't even know what's happening around us? Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it okay that I'm feeling this way? Why am I feeling this way? You know, like, I think most people are just dealing with the emotions, but not ever getting to the why behind the emotions.
And this is the struggle that people in this community are kind of seeing, you know, firsthand, is people, how we actually are able to communicate these ideas, the value of the individual to people who are willing to listen. What is the way that we come towards these thoughts and to build this new structure for us to have a better experience all together, right? Because we're all building this experience. So I think that,
Like, and if someone hands you a book, like, you know, in my childhood, they hand you the Bible and they're like, this is the rules of the game, basically. Mm-hmm. They're saying, follow these rules and everything's good. You're on the good side. Yeah. And then you get to a certain point in my life where I'm like, yeah, but a lot of the stuff is contradictory. And a lot of it doesn't even make sense. And why would we put all this stuff in this book of instructions that doesn't really apply, or that seems to contradict in one place what it says in another place? And then so in order to transcend that, I kind of put that book aside and be like, well, what do I think outside of that?
Yes.
You know, and how do we get there? How do we encourage people to get there? Well, that part, like we're saying, someone has to kind of get to that point of questioning and imagination and creativity on their own to say, like, you know, I do want to get off this freeway of bullshit. I know it's bullshit. And then they're in this quandary and they're feeling lost. And that's kind of where I was at in my awakening experience. I started questioning everything, you know?
Yeah.
And it's scary. It's really a scary experience to do that, the long night of the soul, all that. But if you're on that path, and if you've kind of pushed through that original waking up from Plato's cave and seeing the light, then this is, I think, where the stuff that Brendan's really offering comes into play. Like, now what do you do?
It's your decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, where do you go with that decision? Right.
And, you know, I think one of the things that I found helps a lot of people has been the book, The End of All Evil. That's one of the things that I see as one of those touchstones that people are able to start manifesting their own power when they start seeing their own value. And, you know, bringing that book to as many people as possible, that's one of the methods that I think is really engaging and really assistance to teach people that, you know what, there's something else out there. And another aspect of that is, you know, this conversation here and all the work you do, Chris, because you've been doing so much great work, you know. And I host a Tuesday night chat over Telegram, and that's a natural law discussion group. And so we discuss various principles and how we can actually use them to create solutions for ourselves and for the people we love. And that's I incorporate a lot of different aspects there, right? It's not just simply one thing, but it's a panacea of various ideas and solutions that we all just try and stew together into something meaningful and coherent that we can actually make actionable and use every day. Because there's so many things out there that we can use. We're steeped in so much knowledge now. We have these capabilities that humanity has never before had, at least in recent history, when it comes to learning about these principles and acting on them. And we're you know, creating for ourselves that opportunity.
Yeah, I've often thought, as far as we know, right now is the culmination of all history. So there's never, as far as we know, there's never been more information or stories or history available than there is now. So we have an incredible plethora, like you said, pancopia of ideas and thoughts, but those connections with real other human beings that are on a similar path that we are on offers so much opportunity for learning and comparing and contrasting. And for me, it's been crucial. I see relationships as mirrors into the self. How else do we know who we are, how we act, or how we affect people until we do that in a relationship and see how it comes back? That's our mirror into our own soul. So I think I really recommend people check out Brendan's group Tuesday nights. That's Telegram.
That's on Telegram. Yeah, Natural Law Discussions.
Natural Law Discussions. You'll have to give me that link when we get a chance, and we'll share this episode, or we'll put it in the chat. And because that might be a good opportunity for folks to meet up with other like-minded people. For me, that part of my process has been crucial. When I started doing my podcast on Natural Law, I also started doing an advertisement to reach out to other people that were interested in natural law. And we formed a group, and that group became a support group. And then later out of that support group grew the Freedom Under Natural Law Conference. And so that all came from the collaboration of other minds. When you put minds together, it levels you up in ways that now you have more perspectives, more ideas. And I always think to myself, it's one reason I love the One Great Work Warriors talks. Yes. I could talk for an hour and a half, no problem. But all you're going to get is Chris's life and experience and thoughts, which are, it's great shit. Don't get me wrong. It's badass.
A lot of value.
Four or five other minds, I feel like it's that times four or five. It's multiplied, because yes, now you get all these thoughts contrasted, or the Funnel Conference where we get 10 or 12 content creators to spend some serious time putting their thoughts together. And then you compare and you see all the ways they interweave and interact. So I really appreciate what you're doing with the group work. That's something else.
Me too, man.
What would you say is one of the biggest, you know, this world can be depressing.
Oh yeah.
I would say like one of my biggest personal things I battle with is trying to keep myself on a good state of mind day to day, moment to moment. And in my work, I still do a lot of construction, carpentry work.
Kudos.
I like doing, but I do want to in the future move more to doing this kind of work exclusively if I could find a way to fund that lifestyle.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I really enjoy my work and the way I go about it. And there are a lot of little things I do to help me be in the state of mind I like to be in. So I'm curious your thoughts on what I'm going to call mental maintenance, you know.
Okay.
Through the days, through the weeks, how do we keep from getting sucked into the mire of all the bullshit, you know?
Well, the word that comes to mind is mindfulness. It's just to be making those decisions every day as we can, right? But you know what? I get trapped in those structures as well. I don't think it's a unique experience. Everyone kind of does fall into certain patterns that are not necessarily the best outcome for them. But, you know, if we are mindfully watching ourselves, if we're being conscious about our attention, if we're being conscious about and honest with ourselves too, about where we currently are and the patterns that we're experiencing, then we can really have a better understanding of what we do need to change. And if there is something that we do need to change, if we can point our finger on it, then that is something that we can very realistically have an effect on. We know what we can affect. We know that we have power over our own minds, and we can create for ourselves the life we wish, the life we wish for ourselves as it plays out for us in our own mind, in our own body, in our own spirit. And so that's, once again, I fall back on hypnosis, and maybe it's kind of a catch-all idea, but it really does allow you so much more power and so much more flexibility over your own consciousness. And it's one of those tools that, you know, it's not going to make your life perfect for sure, but definitely it's going to help you do the housework, do the house cleaning, and keep your thoughts and mind in order to assist you a little bit more, put you on a higher, higher frame of consciousness, a higher level.
Absolutely. And I think there's ways to give ourselves little reminders and triggers. I read a book called Atomic Habits.
Yes.
I'm forgetting the author's name right now, but the book really affected me because he offers some really good strategies, real day-to-day life things. And one of them I think of as triggers. Like the simple one I talk about often is doing squats while we brush teeth.
Oh, wow.
You know, I brush my teeth every evening before going to bed. Yeah. And it's about, takes about 2 minutes. I got one of those automatic toothbrush that goes, bzz, right? And when you push the button, you got 2 minutes, right?
Yes, well, sir.
2 minutes of squats is kind of what was recommended me one time when I had a problem with my meniscus and my knee. So it's kind of perfect. Like, I'm going to be standing there brushing my teeth anyway. It's a perfect time to do squats. So I do. That's really cool. And I never forget to do my squats because it's a trigger. As soon as you brush your teeth, oh, squats, right? So there's ways we can start to integrate in our life the habits we want to form that will become so routine mm-hmm. that we can't not do them. And what kind of habits do we want in our life? Doing squats is a good one.
Yes.
Meeting with other like-minded natural law students on Tuesday nights with Brendan. That might be another good one. I have 2 to 3 or 4 meetings per week with people that are like-minded. Most of my conversations these days are with people that are on a similar wavelength that I am, that have already gone through a lot of the struggles I have in life. And so I can think back to 5 years ago when I was first like starting to podcast, most of the people I was interacting with had no understanding of natural law, didn't understand that we're in slavery. And so every conversation with anybody was a struggle because I'm always going back to these things. But the more I formed around myself through little steps, a community of people that I spend time with and talk to and meet with, all my conversations now are with that level and that caliber of people. And I don't watch the news. I don't know what's going on with the political left and right. And I don't fucking care.
Really. No way.
I don't fucking care. It's all the same shit to me. And I catch little glimpses of the news through other people's conversations. And that's plenty to keep me filled in of what I need to know what's going on. And the important aspects of my life are my relationships with real people I spend time with and how I interact with them and my transactions, daily transactions in life. So
yes.
You know, sorry I'm going off so long, but I hope that feeds into some ideas you can share with folks too from your experience in similar vein.
Well, definitely you have to cultivate those thought forms. It's not just something that arises spontaneously. Maybe you get the first inkling out of there, just plucking it out of the ether, but without watering it and caring for it, then you can never have those kind of thought forms flower into conversations like this, into forms like this that you have had into this podcast. And so it's a blessing to be able to be here and to have these kind of people who are all on this same wavelength and sharing these thoughts. And so as far as it goes with, what was the other point you had just said? Excuse me.
Yeah, I guess I was just kind of talking about, you know, the power of networking and creating good habits for ourselves in order to actually take steps towards the change and manifestation we want to see in our life. You know, how do we actually do that? You know, and I was saying, you know, hinging good habits on a daily basis, doing physical things, and then habits of being with the right, I'm not right, but people that are going to elevate you.
For sure. And the thought that comes to me when you say that, when in those terms, is the concept of anchoring. It's a hypnotic concept of anchoring, right? And so it's one where you associate a positive thought form with a physical action, or you could do it just even not, doesn't even have to be a physical action. It can be anything. You can anchor your positive thought forms to. So you can recall a certain way of being anytime you need to, and by using your anchors. So you can have, you know, if you, I work with a hand signal or hand symbol. So someone can associate their positive thought form, their self-suggestion with a hand symbol, then they can use the hand symbol anytime in order to bring back these thoughts to the forefront of their mind, so they can be actively reminded, like, everything they need to do in order to fulfill their highest vision of success, right? They can become that person and actively use those thoughts a little more effectively. So that's what I'm interested in when it comes to, you know, anchoring ideas and connecting those to various things, right? And I think your example of brushing your teeth and squatting at the same time, I think that's a really perfect way of doing that as well. You know, you have this habit which you've already formed, but you're just associating it with an additional structure that is serving you well, that is doing things for your body, for your mind, for your health, for your knee, all these good stuff.
Yeah. And then, it reminded me of one thing you were talking about, the 108 repetitions.
Yes, sir.
When I went through my own, like, the most exciting, life-changing time for me, which I always call my Matrix experience.
Yeah.
I was using this YouTube video I found called the Green Tara 108 repetitions.
Yeah.
And that mantra became a sound that soothed my soul. Wow. And I was going through so much turmoil of re-realizing reality that Green Tara song over and over and over going through my body, mind, and spirit, it helped heal me. It helped me get through that time. And so I found that, you know, I just came across it. It came to me and it was beautiful. So that's just a side note.
It's very funny you mentioned that, though.
Yeah.
Because I've used the Green Tara mantra as well.
Have you?
I had a spiritual experience when doing so, and I would just be repeating it while driving in the car, and just came to me out of nowhere. It felt like there was another consciousness just tapped in, like, kind of
like, wow.
Yeah. So that I've had
some synchronicity right there. We both have gotten some juice out of that.
Yeah, it's been a second, but for sure, I remember very distinctly in the past, like, having a conversation with myself and with my own consciousness and or whatever other form might be out there.
Yeah, so there are things that will come to your aid when you're going down these scary paths if you're open to finding those tools. But I was going to ask you, I'm sure you've done a lot of reading. I bet you've read some Carl Jung. Are there any particular resources, books, podcasts that you would recommend to people to look at on these topics of hypnosis, subconsciousness, etc.?
Great question. Specific resources. I am thinking, but nothing is necessarily coming to mind as far as texts for hypnosis. I mean, I think that I've just gone through some, I've just downloaded so many books of hypnosis now that I don't know which one begins, but they're all not necessarily of the same caliber. But, you know, if you are interested in learning hypnosis to use with other people, the term that I like to use, the most effective form is Ericksonian hypnosis, which is kind of a clinical version of hypnosis. And he was a very famous hypnotist who's helped a lot of people. And so Ericksonian is the process of actually just allowing yourself to go into a hypnotic state. And it really does have a great deal of value there. Other books that I would recommend, kind of blanking a little, to be honest.
Yeah, that's okay. No problem. Well, we talked about The End of All Evil. We want everybody to read that book for sure.
Yeah, The End of All Evil is the book that I would like to facilitate that as far as I can get it. I've been dropping copies of that book in various places and various libraries and just sending it out in mass to people.
Right on.
And so, you know, definitely spreading that out as far as I can foresee, you know. A lot of copies still.
On meditation, that's one of those things too, where there's all these different styles of meditation, transcendental meditation. There's a lot of different ways to go about meditation. For me personally, what I found works best is I do Wim Hof breathing.
Okay, Wim Hof. Yeah, that's a beautiful method.
Yeah, and if I do like two full rounds of Wim Hof breathing, that takes about 15 minutes, 12, 15 minutes, something like that. Maybe a little less. And if I do four, it's like I'm there for like 20 minutes breathing, basically. And during that time, I find it to be a pretty good meditation. I can either let my mind go free flow, or I can try to go down a directed path, which I sometimes have created for myself, like a little storyline where I swim out to these rocks, I climb the rocks, and then I jump into this cavern. And it's all like a storyline I've created over the years. I have a few, but so for me, just the breathing practice is one of my regular meditation practices because it provides a certain structure for me to sit still and let my mind. But what works for you? What would you recommend? I mean, there's so many different styles.
I mean, alongside the Wim Hof method, because that does increase DMT production in your own mind, right? As I understand, that's what I've understood. I just have used DMT directly, but that's more so to have conversations with my own body and my own mind, right? So one of the medical things that I have been working through is I get this trigeminal neuralgia, which is just this really, really sharp pain in my head. And when I do that, though, I use a DMT vape in order to have a conversation with the pain in order to understand the lesson that the pain is trying to teach me. And so that's always been a really helpful method for me, is, you know, those forms there. And it's not necessarily for everyone, but it does cut the pain completely and it does make my experience a lot better. Beyond that, though, yeah, there's a lot there. Other structures that have assisted me.
That's cool. I'm curious about those DMT. I haven't really. But I will say that magical mushrooms, I've experimented with quite a bit in my life, and just the right amount of mushrooms in the right place in the right time and place can put you in a place where your mind really reflects on. I always find myself reflecting on relationships and questioning my own choices in life, and really kind of sometimes it's a little bit scary, and you get apprehensive. And I've learned to push through that feeling and enjoy what's to be learned. And so sometimes I think we have to put ourselves in a little bit of a difficult place that feels a little bit scary in order to actually face these things that are difficult.
And that's the growth paradigm, right? In order to grow, you have to be uncomfortable. It's not necessarily you're not going to just be able to exist in the same plane forever and expect yourself to grow, but you have to do put yourself in those situations where it's not necessarily you know exactly what you're doing, but we all do the best we can, right?
Absolutely. Well, this is we've covered a lot of ground. This has been a great talk.
Thank you.
We're kind of rounding towards the hour here, so we can kind of close up, but I'd love to hear, like, you know, your last thoughts, things you want to leave people with, any encouragement you want to give to our listeners.
Yes. So encouragement, I would say, if you have a clear vision in mind, you are already a success. That is what I like to hone in on most importantly, is because people, they conceive of themselves in terms of like, oh, like I don't have enough. It's like, or I don't have this, or I still am lacking all this. When the truth is that we're all have so much to work on, but as long as we're working on something that we have value and moving towards, then we are acting with success. And that if we can think of ourselves in terms of that we already are a success, it empowers us enormously to take the next step, to keep moving forward. And I'm always really grateful to, I'm really grateful to be here today, Chris. Thank you so much for this. And, you know, I would love to share more hypnosis with anyone who's interested, anyone who wants to step into their vision of success in order to live the life that they want to live, then I'd be more than willing to talk with you or help you out with that. And there's so many strategies and techniques that we can be utilizing to this end that I just have one little edge of a corner to assist people best way I can. So thank you again, man.
Hey, it only takes one little edge to peel off a sticker, right?
That's the truth. Hey, that's wisdom.
You know what I mean? Everything that we might want to open or discover starts with cracking some little hole or some little opening to where we can look in, and then boom, we discover from there.
Yeah, so anyone who's willing to take a look into hypnosis with me, please find me on my website, empowerhypnosis.app, empowerhypnosis.app.
Empowerhypnosis.app. We'll say, repeat that 7 times. But also,
yes, sir.
Your Tuesday night group is a Telegram.
Yeah, natural law discussion group. It's my Telegram group. So that's been around for 4+ years, 5 now.
Right on. Sorry, I haven't made it yet.
No,
that's awesome.
Ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys with it, you know. We all do what we can.
Yeah, and you know, every time I reach out and meet someone new that I bring on an End Evil podcast, I find it like encouraging that there are a lot more people out there than I realize that are doing this work. Jake Jackson was in the Funnel Conference.
Very cool.
And he's been doing this work for 10 years or more, you know, like a long time, longer than I have. And I didn't really even know about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy that, you know, it's easy to start saying no one cares, no one sees this stuff, but there are more people out there than you realize.
Yes.
You're not going to find your team or your group or your peers until you put yourself out there in some way or form or another, which is uncomfortable. I get it. Having conversation with strangers, posting yourself on social media, whatever it takes is a hard, hard first step. But once you take that step, I mean, contact Brendan, contact me, contact somebody you see on one of these videos, and you'll be surprised. People are people.
Yeah.
Most times people will hit you back, you know?
Yeah. And humanity has never been more awake than they are at this present moment. There's never been more people that understand the true dynamics of freedom and of slavery than this present time. We're building that temple every day, and we're going to get there. And I have full faith and confidence that, you know, humanity is on the upswing and that we're going to be okay in the end.
Well, I mean, you know, the book, The End of All Evil, he does make that point. That's just a matter of time.
And it's true.
Evil's kind of, I think of it like a cancer in the body of good. You know, it's either going to die itself off, or it's going to take down everything it can with it. But love and God and it, on life and creativity are not going to die. They're going to go on, and there's going to be a lot of opportunity. So we might have struggles in the coming 100 years of humanity because of all the cumulative problems that have built up to this point, but we do have the potential to really make a difference right now and leave a legacy for the next generation of people. And I think,
well said.
I think that, you know, let's grab hold of that opportunity.
We got it.
We need you guys. We need everyone.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. So yeah, much, much love, much appreciated, Brendan, for your time. And we'll look forward to connecting again in the future. And
All right. Cool.
Well,
thank you so much for having me here today. You guys are fantastic. All the work you're doing is so important. So thank you so much for all your hard work.
Awesome. Much love.
All right.